that's, you know, I mean, that Dick used to describe it like that. So, yeah.
Okay, so I guess tomorrow we would say that, okay, we have a red yard. Those red yards are not acting as the resonant elements of an antenna, and their function is low resistance coupled with loop path. And then it's a free point saving the return current from being forced to the large earth. But at the same time, somebody may say, well, swear. Many people do not know what I'm talking about, but SWIR was the system that used Earth as one of the wires. And that was electrical system. It is still being used in many countries. I'm not sure if it's used in the United States any longer, but it is definitely used in Costa Rica, because I was in Costa Rica. And then if the question is, if Earth is so lossy, why do they use it as a wire, as a return path? Back to you, Dr. Roy.
Well, because to a degree it can work that way, and so in some special cases where it's effective, you use what you got. It's not probably, I mean, it's not the high loss nature of ground. It's simply that if it didn't have some degree of resistance, if it was just, you know, salt water, or, you know, basically damp seawater with some sand in it, you could make the case that the current would kind of dissipate all over the place and you'd have even more losses than if it was granite and such, and the current going through the ground would be very, very minimal. So there would be less opportunity for it to dissipate in earth ground. So, again, the problem is that none of these things are chalkboard talks. It's nature is complicated. Different things are happening simultaneously. Some are useful, some are useless. Some will screw up your situation. In certain cases, you can use things that in other cases would be detrimental to the benefit of what you want to do with the equipment. So, you know, again, it's the fact that these things are not simple concepts. They're complicated, and they have good, bad, and indifferent aspects that you have to either deal with or suffer the consequences.
Interesting. And the last thing is, we have a right job, and some people say ground, because the word ground is in the ground plane. And my strong opinion is right now has nothing to do with grounding system. Radio is said to improve the radiation efficiency of monopole antenna for providing better ground plane, while grounding system primarily ensures electrical safety and stability. Back to you for your comment.
Well, I mean, we've talked about this repeatedly. One of the terms that I wish physicists wouldn't have used is all the different things that they call ground, which confuses everyone, because they're not the same thing. Earth ground is not the same as RF ground. They're just different things. And that's what I think you're making the comment. But we've made the comment repeated and endlessly throughout the years that if you just kind of generically use the word ground as anything that uses the word, you'll be very confused, because it explains different things, because it's a word poorly chosen for more than one characteristic.
Okay, thank you very much for that. The next one, Rudy. So the name of the ham radio operator is Rudy. His call sign is K7RAW, and he made a video. And he made a video about a transceiver, RS998, ATRHF, plus VHF, plus civil bands, all together, and 100 watts. And it's $1,285.99. Wow. So I was trying to find out more. And then I found, what is the name of it? Well, Retevis, R-E-T-E-V-I-S, Retevis. Retevis is a Chinese company that specializes in communication equipment, particularly walkie-talkies and two-way radios. Now, remember what I said, how much you need to work hard to screw up a piece of wire that's supposed to serve as a wire for an antenna. So in here, from that perspective, I'm looking at that radio, because radio looks absolutely amazingly nice. The Retevis RS998, which is the model number, the LDR radio that has HF plus 2 meters. It is true LDR radio based on direct down convert DDC and direct up converter DUC architecture. It covers 160 meters to 2 meters band, including CB radio. It is rated 100 watts for 160 meters to 20 meters and 30 to 60 watts for upper bands. Let me drop. Okay. There are way too many features, so I'm going to talk about a few of them. Some of a previous history about that radio. Because now we have a Chinese that put something on a market that is absolutely amazingly nice. And then we're looking about Chinese guys screwing up the piece of wire. And then we say, how could they make a good transceiver? So before 2022, Russian aggression of Ukraine, Russian hands were willing to make some money on Americans, Europeans, and Australians. The first Russian QRP radio featuring CNC made enclosure. It was LAP-599, and the model number was discovered TX-500. It was based on Rubovsk, Russia. Rubovsk was the QTH, the place when they manufactured this. And it was portable SDR transceiver that gained significant attention in ham radio in United States. And it was absolutely a beautiful thing. Many hams were trying to buy it. I'm sorry. And then you're going to have a problem, and you're not going to have any guarantee on it, or warranty, or whatever. So, how much of that concept was stolen art? We don't know. But many hands made good reviews of it. And it was $1,869. So it was more expensive than this radio that I'm talking about right now. Okay. So the radio was to be inexpensive, but with all additional measures, felt for me like a quite expensive, bulky, Russian piece of junk, possibly made as a side job, with help of bribes on some government manufacturing facility, highly likely using illegally smuggled to Russia Western CNCs, but it was definitely a unique Russian concept. The radio I'm talking about today goes by several brand names. So at first, Russian made of Wolf. Wolf means Volk. In Russian means a wild animal. After Russian aggression, they presented the concept to Chinese. And Chinese factories packaged that 100-watt version of UA3REO design into desktop mobile chassis featuring large 7-inch capacity touchscreen and 3D waterfall. And that 3D waterfall is absolutely magnificent. And, of course, they added Wi-Fi into it. Let me drop. Okay. The exact same core transceiver design was branded as and sold under different names depending on the distributor. So that was reuse, REEUS, it was H5S, it was Gantik, it was Wolf, it was Zaston for Russia, it was RS998 for America. It was based on STM32H7 processor and EP4CE22 FPGA. And I was trying hard, but they tend to claim something that I didn't find in literature, that it's supposed to be the Russian open-source software-defined radio SDR design that is manufactured, modified, and commercialized by Chinese electronics companies. But it looks like they're trying to avoid the word Russia and eventually trying to avoid the word China for some reason. I'm not sure why. As always, some the ham get it from China for free of charge and is making review of it. So, that's about the radio. So if you want, you can have a radio that has ADC, AGC, drivers, codecs, DNR thresholds, noise blanking features, functions, the sort of things typical to high-end radio. And I'm sure I'm having a question to Dr. Roy, because he has a flex. What makes a good radio, SDR, today? Back to you, Dr. Roy.
Well, I mean, capabilities, specifications, and reliability behind it. Would I spend thousands of dollars on a imported Chinese radio? No, because I would be very concerned that there's no place to get it fixed once you buy it. I mean, it's kind of it becomes a disposable radio. And, you know, I don't conceive of anything other than Outfog as a disposable radio. So, I mean, to me, there's a big limitation in Russian and or Chinese technology that's expensive. I wouldn't want the nuisance of having to deal with it when it breaks, whereas with my Flex Radio, it's manufactured in Texas. I can pick up a phone, I can send them an email, and I have it turned around rather quickly. And the first 5 years, they basically paid the shipping back and forth, which was nice of them, although it was an expensive model. But, I mean, it costs a lot without without the manufacturer paying for shipping to ship things back and forth to China.
Okay, interesting. In addition, that transceiver has CWRTTY decoder. It has a Wi-Fi SSID, 3 SSIDs. It emulates TS2000, which I have 2 TS2000. One the mobile version, the other one is the black version, universal one, or ST450 hardware. Auto squelch, whisper beacon that works at 77 to 80 watts, approximately. It can work on the sideband FM, and it has RJ45 jack for programmable microphone. So those are the things. Those are the things that that this radio presents. Of course, thinking about Russian-Chinese cooperation. 3 years ago, President Putin made a change of the law in Russia, where patent law is not obeyed in Russia. They can take any technology and use it and manufacture whatever they want, and there is no punishment for it. So we do not know how much of that radio technology is stolen art. But then we have a Chinese company that is trying, not trying their own design, but trying Russian design on their manufacturing facility. So we may think how much of the stolen American or European art Russian implemented in the radio that is now manufactured by Chinese, and eventually what we're going to do with it when we have the radio here, we spend the money and we want to use it. And it happens that something belongs to the patent protection that's supposed to be obeyed in the United States of America, the land of freedom and liberty. And at first, the land of respect. But to you, Dr. Roy, and to Eric Sheehan.
Okay. Is that the point? I don't know what to tell you. I mean, unfortunately, intellectual property is regularly stolen around the world. And the Chinese are kind of infamous. Not only will they just kind of buy stuff, take it apart, figure out how it works, and just make copies of it. Sometimes they'll talk the manufacturer into letting them manufacture their product and then run the factory during the weekends and nights and sell the bootlegged versions from the same factory. So, you know, this is a problem with countries that don't respect intellectual property. But you see where it got the Russians. You know, Russia, you know, every so often people kind of say, you know, why is it seems there's no real high technology Russian product of anything going around. I mean, the only product I know from Russia that's imported to the United States is equipment to sharpen knife blades, which is not really, in my opinion, high tech, but, you know, whatever. So it's because of, you know, you can't make any money in Russia, so you either take your technology elsewhere or you hide it, or you just get drunk and forget about the whole thing.
I would agree with you completely, and to an extent they have a tabakerka. Tabakerka means a cigarette lighter. And they are proud of it. And they have Sharpik. Sharpik is... I'm not sure what is the English name for it. Women have around their neck a piece of material that looks fancy, nice, and whatsoever. What is the English name for it? Back to you.
I don't know.
Okay, I don't know either. So they have two products, strictly Russian, Sharpik and Tabakerka, which is... Tabakerka from the word tabaka. Tabaka means cigarette lighter and something that you could keep the material that you make your cigarettes from it. I'm not smoking. I'm sorry. I don't know the proper wording for it. But anyhow, the next one is the last minute. The last minute is 17,999 electric car from Japan. And that's, we could say, rumor has it. In one source, it says Toyota has announced a new electric vehicle priced $17,999. Which is expected to significantly impact the electrical vehicle market by making EV more affordable for consumers. This move could challenge competitors and reshape industry price landscape. That's one of the sources, and it talks about affordability, competitive pressure, and Tesla, and American car prices and whatsoever, and even Japan, Chinese, there are standards with that, what Toyota is trying to do. And they predict that the manufacturing should be able to make that car on the market in 2027, 2028. That means next year. And the other one is not that optimistic, and it says, well, it's mostly to destroy competitors. Toyota has made no official announcement or product release for car matching this specific price and description whatsoever. So it is up to you guys to check how credible is that information. Dr. Liu, thank you very much, and that's all for tonight.
Okay, very good, Wesley. Thank you, as usual, for your efforts and your participation. I do appreciate it. Once again, I continue to be AC2GS. This continues to be the Limewalk technical net, and we still have a good amount of time if people want to take advantage of it. It's up to you guys. I've said this before, and no doubt we'll say it again. This is not a monologue on my part. This is not, you know, Dick, God bless him. He used to be very proud that he had booked more hours on his technical net than Johnny Carson had on his TV show. But this is not a TV show, and not Johnny Carson. So it's up to you guys. If you got questions, if you got comments, if you got topics you want to roll around, I'm more than happy to assist you in that. I take pleasure in doing that. So it's up to you guys. If you have any questions or comments or topics that you would like to get into tonight, just hit that push to talk and tell me about yourself, and we'll put you on the list.
WB2BX, so how you doing?
Doing okay, Frank. How you doing?
Okay. You want to see if you have any other check-ins before I go ahead?
Okay, the eternal optimist. I'll give it a try. Anyone else want to kind of put their name on the list for tonight? Please hit that push to talk.
All right, I guess as Dick would say, I'm number one on the runway, right?
Yep.
Okay, very good. Which I always found ironic, since Dick hated to flop. Anyway, a friend of mine, my buddy on the West Coast, operates station out of an apartment like many of us do here in the Northeast also, mentioned to me that he's faced with an increasingly high noise level to the point where his noise level is consistently S7 to S9 in the East Bay area. And, and it occurred to me that it seems like it should be feasible for some machine learning algorithm or maybe even a conventional algorithm to filter out broadband noise and leave you just with sideband, narrowband, sideband, or CW signal. And I think I've heard some talk of it, but I haven't heard of any practical products out there yet, or maybe I just haven't looked for them. Is that something that's thought to be doable, something that's being worked on, or something that already exists, and I just don't know about it yet?
AC2GS. Well, it's possible. It's being worked on, and it's not perfect, but it's out there. There's a free program you can get called, I think it's called RM Noise. It logs on to a AI server, and it's been taught to kind of try to extract out from a noisy signal It's okay. It's probably a little bit better than any of the noise reduction circuits that are just hard-coded into radios that I've played with. Flex has its own for people who own the 8000 series and probably the Aurora. The latest, greatest firmware for Smart SDR has a artificial intelligence-based noise reduction algorithm that I haven't been able to play with because it doesn't work on the 6000 series yet, if ever. So it's out there. People are working on it, and the feasibility is relatively good, depending upon, you know, how sophisticated we can make it. I mean, theoretically, ultimately, they might be able to just kind of extract a synthesized voice and just have a noise-free signal. Unfortunately, state-of-the-art artificial intelligence doesn't specifically guarantee that the voice that you hear will say the words that the guy at the other station said. They may, you know, use probabilities, and that might get into trouble. A kind of pseudo-realistic conversation on the other end. But it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, I know. That wouldn't surprise me if it just makes up stuff at times. The AI seems to like to do that. I've sort of played with having AI, my Meta glasses, read my screen to proofread something I'm writing, and just in case I'm missing something, and sometimes if for some reason it doesn't see the screen entirely clearly, it just makes up with a couple of words. It's like, well, that's not helpful for proofreading. And most of the time it does pretty well. Anyway, yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. But the fact is, on HF, on a noisy signal, you lose so much anyway, where something that isn't a perfect copy of what the other person is saying may be good enough for comms on HF. Go ahead.
Well, like I said, I mean, it'll probably get increasingly better as the learning models become more sophisticated. And hopefully someday we will all move off of generative technology to something more sophisticated and possibly capable of the Holy Grail that has been predicted since the get-go, you know, the God computer that knows all. You know, we're idiots. We'll ask Sam Altman, you know, how to make a profit off of his product. And he says, well, I don't have the faintest idea. What I'm thinking is we'll build it, and then we'll turn it on, and we'll ask it.
Well, he does claim they saw, apparently, that his people started selling ads on ChatGPT a month ago, and that they're raking in cash at a $1 billion annualized rate. I don't know. I can't cash in a check for $1 billion based on a $1 billion annualized rate of 1 month of income. So they're kind of playing fast and loose with some of their financial numbers. But some of the stuff they do is amazing. I've been playing with having AI generate some nice images to go with my blog post. And it seems good enough for that. It's been kind of interesting. And I've been playing with WhisperFlow, which is an AI-enabled dictation program instead of typing. I've never been a really good typist, and it gets rid of all my typos. Isn't great on grammar. I still run a grammar checker and fix things, but it's still pretty darn good and increases my productivity quite a bit, which doesn't say very much for me, actually, but still You know, there are some useful things AI does. Anyway, one of the things I'm going to experiment is I have an e-book that I wrote a couple of years ago during the pandemic, and I'm thinking of running it through ChatGPT work, asking work, okay, what do I need to update in this book? I already have a good idea, but it'll be interesting to collaborate with it and see what I get. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's a very interesting parlor trick. I'm amazed by things that it could do, and I have no doubt that it will engender multi-billion-dollar industries. The problem, though, is the people who are developing it have $1 trillion in debt, and it's going to take a long time, you know, making $1 billion here and $1 billion there to pay off $1 trillion. And that was the problem with the dot-com. You know, if you waited 20 years to pay off the loans, yeah, you might have survived. But most people don't want loans that just sit there and accrue interest and such. They want you to start paying off the loans. So there's no way that I could perceive that they could take this technology and squeeze the trillions of dollars of, from business and consumers. I just don't think there's the demand for that much expense.
Yeah. Well, as you said, there's a certain amount of Ponzi scheme there. You know, the same money being passed back and forth, sort of, the financial perpetual motion machine. And as you just said, that was tried I think my thumb hit the screen there. Anyway, that was tried a quarter century ago, and it didn't work too well. And they're trying the same thing again. Good.
Well, yeah, I mean, you don't, it's not just one case. I mean, it goes all the way back to tulips. People kind of get over their skis and start to make all kinds of promises. I mean, I'm sure you've heard Sam Altman make all kinds of stupid promises that, you know, you will live forever and none of us will have to work. Elon's attitude is you just plug in this God intelligence to his God-like robots that keep falling over and are basically glorified puppets. And, everything that you ever wanted will be piled up in front of you. He doesn't really explain where you get the raw material. You know, if I say I would like a couple of tons of gold, somehow a robot and an artificial intelligence will bring me gold. The fact that there's only so much that's accessible, although probably he would say, well, his super intelligent robot will be able to travel to the center of the earth and mine it. God knows. There's a lot of the Music Man. If anyone is familiar with the Music Man, I have always thought that I've been kind of living through that play over and over again when it comes to AI.
My wife is the musical theater nerd, so I'll have to ask her about Music Man. I kind of generally know the story, kind of remember Marion the Librarian. Like I said, I was kind of stunned by Sam Altman saying he's selling ads at a $1 billion annualized rate. Well, how long has he been selling ads? 1 month. That's kind of interesting financial math, isn't it? One more question, practical question, before we move on to the next person. That software you were suggesting my buddy and I take a look at is it RM, as in radio mic noise. As in noise, Q-R-N-C-E, N-O-I-S-E. Is that correct?
Yeah, I believe that's the name for it. I used it for about a month. You have to have a computer hooked up to your radio to process it. And thankfully, I was a little concerned at the beginning that since it runs on a remote server's operation, it might there might be latency issues and such, but I didn't find any of that when I used it.
All right, you're a pretty good computer guy. If he's motivated enough, he'll get it working. It sounds interesting. I could probably anyway see what happens. I'll pass that on to him and see if he wants to play with that, because having operated an apartment station in Brooklyn, I know how frustrating it is not to hear anything a good portion of the time, especially when you start getting back towards the 10-spot minimum and signals get weaker than they are right now. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's a relatively simple program. It shouldn't require much effort to get it working. Don't expect a great deal out of it. When it was presented to me, it sounded almost as though it dropped the noise floor. It doesn't drop the noise floor. That's not how these things work. But, you know, like I said, it operates as a particularly good old-fashioned noise-reducing algorithm on a digital sound processing chip.
Yeah, but will it pull out signals you can't hear otherwise because of your high noise level? I don't suppose you have any recordings of what it sounds like with and without it. Maybe their website does, come to think of it. Anyway, sounds like an interesting idea to play with.
Yeah, and the price certainly is right, zero.
Yeah, as I said, he's in the Bay Area, where I think cups of coffee cost $5 an ounce. Or maybe it's $10. They're $5 in Manhattan now. I'm not sure. Anyway, so he'll certainly appreciate the price tag. Go ahead.
Yeah, you can't go wrong. I really like when things are priced that way. I mean, a lot of times there are compromises, like when I do the audio stream of the technical net and other things. I use Icecast, and there are latency issues, but the price is free as well. So with that kind of price margin, I couldn't say no.
Yeah, I mean, there are limits to what you can do if you're doing post-processing by running the audio from your receiver through your computer, you know, rather than doing something in the RF deck. But it still sounds like something you might want to try. Yeah, that's, I mean, that's what ham radio is all about, sort of. Trying stuff. Go ahead.
Yeah. I like I said, I found it fascinating. It's not going to be revolutionary. You're not going to be able to take something where you can't hear anything because everything's below the noise floor. You turn this on, and the noise floor drops, you know, 3S units. It's not like that. It's like someone came up with a slightly better noise reduction algorithm for a DSP. Except that you have to kind of, at least this version, you have to tie it to a server someplace out there. The Flex Radio seems to just have it to process locally, so I don't think you need to be connected to the internet to use the version of the RM noise reduction algorithm that Flex came up with for the 8000 series new SBR radios.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, it sounds like it needs to be connected to the internet. Okay, it's something that the POTA and SOTA activators wouldn't be too happy with because they want to operate in places where they may not have economical internet access, but for a home station, that might be fine. Anyway, interesting thing to try. You might have tried it already. I'll text them in a moment once I'm done here, and we'll see. But I thought it was worth asking. How was 10 meters today? I got on 15 meters this afternoon using a remote in Connecticut and worked on sideband India and Saudi Arabia within a minute or two of each other. There's a guy in Cyprus on, but apparently he had it's too much noise from activity in Europe. He was not hearing me, and he usually does, a big contestation in Cyprus. Either that or a lot of spurious spurs from military radars overloading his radio, since Cyprus is pretty close to the war zone. But anyway, called him a couple of times. He wasn't hearing me. I'm like, okay, I have this one confirmed already. Never mind. Anyway, so propagation seems a little better than usual on 15 meters. About, I think it was a little after 10 this morning. Was it after 10? No, probably closer to 11 this morning. Go ahead.
C2GS. Well, good for you. Unfortunately, 10 meters was dead as the proverbial doornail. There was absolutely no activity. It was flatline. I was kind of the only active site. I talked to four or five local people. Mostly it was Brooklyn. That's life as usual in the past. This year's spring and summer has been like that, and last year, the year before that, I'm hoping that as we get to the middle of September and more fall-like season, whatever it is, the geomagnetic storms or whatever is really screwing things up for 10 meters gets alleviated somewhat, and we get a little bit better propagation, but it was a very local situation today.
Yeah, we're supposed to, the propagation forecast, the league posted late last week, suggested propagation improvement toward the equinox and for a couple of weeks after the equinox. So, with luck, we'll see some improvement. So far, no real sign of a second peak, though. I'm hoping for that, but I guess we're still at a point in the cycle where it's possible. Anyway, that's about it. I think last week I mentioned the rather unusual jamming of some anti-Putin guys on CW jamming the Franz Josef Land expedition. Anyway, somebody finally shut those guys up, and I was able to work them. I don't remember if I mentioned that last week or not, but maybe on another night I spoke about that. So go ahead.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, well, I don't know whether the Russian Radio Sports Federation shut them up, or the KGB did, or the Ukrainians just decided they'd made the point. I have no idea what the source of where this character was. But I've been on HF off and on for over 50 years now, and I've never heard anything like that on ham radio, especially on CW anyway. Anyway, with that, I'll let you go. I'm probably going to step aside for a little while and try to get back here in time for the technet. WB2BX, sir. Meaning for the space net. Over on the technet. I don't want to be totally out of it. WB2BX, sir. Back to that.
Again, for participating, I appreciate it, Frank. Once again, I'm AC2GS. This is the Limar Technical Net. We're still open for business. If anyone has any questions or comments or topics for discussion, feel free, hit that push to talk. Okay, we'll give it one more try, and if we don't get anything, we'll just move on. Paul, WS2N with the SpaceNet report. Like I said before, I wouldn't be surprised on Labor Day to have a kind of short session. But it's not terribly short, but a little bit shorter than usual. But if you have any other questions or comments or topics that you would like to bring up before we call this segment an end for tonight, hit the push to talk and ID yourself.
Sounds like you're going to have to sort them out by call areas, but they can do on HM. WB2BX.
Well, I don't really need to do that. I never quite understood why, except to take up time, I guess. And I never particularly liked just wasting space. You know, if people have something interesting. I mean, I remember when I used to share a transceiver on Echolink, and there was always some guy who really wanted to listen to East Cars. And, you know, I would tune in to 14313, and they would be yelling and screaming at each other and acting as children. And then all of a sudden, some jerk would come by and change the radio frequency to East Cars. And I would listen to a boring stream of people just IDing themselves and going to the next ID, and the next ID, and the next ID. Anyway, once again, give you a last try for tonight. If anyone has any questions, comments, or topics that they'd like to roll around on the air for, you know, 10, 15 minutes, please hit the push to talk. Otherwise, we'll move on. Okay, very well. We gave you a chance. Once again, I mentioned it last week, but I'll mention it now as well. Next Sunday is Rosh Hashanah. And the Sunday after that, on the 20th, is Yom Kippur. And so I will not be available for transmitting or receiving. So my part of the technical net will not be on for the next 2 weeks. I will return on the 27th of September, though. So everyone hopefully has enough of the tech net from tonight to get them through these couple of weeks. Anyway, thanks to everyone who participated. I do appreciate it, and I'll be back a little bit later on, but now I'll turn it over to Paul WS2N. Don't worry that you don't have to take it all the way to 11 o'clock. You can end early as well.
Okay, Roy, we're on a hot schedule. AC2GS, WS2N for the SpaceNet report for the TechNet. Very good. And I usually get on the club info net. Maybe if I do that, I'll just let them know that you're not going to be here for a couple of weeks. Okay. And I did want to bring up a basic physics thing that we talked about on this net probably 20 years ago. Last week I went for a driving course. You know, you get your lower insurance if you take that. But the teacher that they had, you know, excellent. But one of the statements they did make, I said, oh, no, here we go again, was, you know, if one car's going 70 miles an hour and the other one's going 70 miles an hour, and they start going head-on, when they crash, it's like a 140-mile-an-hour crash, you know, much more destructive, you know. Do you remember that conversation, Roy? I mean, we probably went on and on with Dick probably for, you know, an hour or so regarding that.
I vaguely remember it, yeah.
Yeah. you know, I wasn't about to tell them because, you know, I'm not going to get out of this thing. But they were convinced that, you know, if you had a wall at 70 miles an hour, and if you had two vehicles the same exact weight, and they crash into one another 70 miles an hour, they don't get the idea that it's the same impact that's hitting a wall at 70. You know, even so, it looks like you're going now 140.
Yep.
So otherwise, all other statements that they had were very true, and they have changed a lot of the laws and you know, regarding what you can do behind a car, you know, behind a wheel of a car, and including operating cell phones and, in our case, amateur radio. You know, you get pulled over, they're going to give you a ticket, but, you know, now it's up to you to fight it. So is it worth it? I don't know. Not to me, it's not.
Yeah, I think that's the way most people feel.
I mean, I thought nothing of putting a 5/8 whip on my car years ago, riding around with a microphone in my hand, and nowadays I don't even think of it. The second they see a microphone, they'll pull you over. Interesting course, but you know, you do this every 3 years now in New York, and a lot of people take the Zoom course. But the library here does it, so you can do it in person. Anyway, I just wanted to talk about a crew that was supposed to go up to the International Space Station this week. A crew of four. They have astronaut Jessica Walken. She's going to be the commander. Luke Delaney, pilot, and two other people, one guy from Canada and another one from Russia. They always send a Russian up on every one of these Dragon vehicles up to the International Space Station. But this time it's delayed, and there's no definite time that they're going to reschedule. But it looks like probably the earliest would probably be early next month, you know, in October. And the reason for it is an O2 leak in the propulsion system, which is not good. They said it was O2, but I believe they used a lot of nitrogen tetroxide. So I'm not sure if they mean that or not, but I'll have to look into that. Because that's the oxidizer they use on these, all the little jets inside of the Dragon. They're talking about the Dragon spacecraft itself. If it was an O2 leak on the second stage or first stage, no problem. They would just swap out the crew vehicle for a different booster in second stage. So looking to eventually figure out what's going on there. But that's not good. So the crew that's up there gets to spend about 6 months. So I guess the crew that's supposed to return will be up there an extra month. And, of course, this happens quite a bit. Any comments? WS2N. Okay. We'll just switch over to Mars. For the first time in over 30 years, NASA has no plans whatsoever of sending any landers to Mars. That means either a lander or a rover. You know, over the decades, they've always had plans of sending that Curiosity back in 2012, and then 2020 they had the big Perseverance rover. They're both nuclear powered, And the years before that, they had the other rovers. They had Spirit and Opportunity, both there. One lasted 6 years, another one lasted 14 years. They were powered by the sun. They've always had landers. They had the Phoenix lander, which landed up as far north as they dare go, you know, on Mars, and that was very, very successful. So, you know, one right after the other, but now, you know, they're pretty much getting away from a lot of science types of flights. NASA's funds have dropped from $25 billion now to $20 billion under this administration. Sure, they're concentrating on the manned space program, which is good, but it looks like a lot of the science stuff is starting to slowly, you know, drift into the sunset. You know, I mean, they do have one mission. I'm not sure if this is ever going to get off the ground. I've talked about it before. The nuclear-powered unmanned flight to Mars. It's called Space Reactor, number one mission. Freedom, you can call it the Freedom Mission. And that's supposed to have a fission nuke on board to power these Hall effect thrusters. So you're going to, you know, you're going to develop electricity from the fission. The fission is going to spin up these turbines, turbines, which will spin and create electricity, you know, generators. You know, the idea is to get to Mars faster using a nuke. And when they get there, they have three helicopters that they plan on launching into the atmosphere called Skyfall. But again, I guess you can consider these things landers because they will fly off, you know, they'll come through the atmosphere with a heat shield and then eventually a parachute, and the bottom shell will, you know, the heat shield will drop off when it gets, you know, slows down, and that will expose the three helicopters, and as it gets close to the ground, you know, The three will separate from the upper shell, and they will fly independently, and I guess land independently. The problem I have with that is there's no vehicle on the surface. You know, if they don't land near Perseverance or Curiosity, they won't be able to communicate with an orbiting vehicle. You know, you're only going to have so much power. They usually use 70 centimeters. You know, for instance, the last helicopter, Ingenuity, they used 70 centimeters to communicate to Perseverance. Perseverance was a big 2,000-pound rover. Well, one-third of that weight on Mars, but, you know, if it was sitting on Earth, it would be 2,000 pounds. And it's 10-by-10 foot rover would pick up the signal from the helicopter and transmit it up to the orbiting satellite. There's still a couple of them left up there, and they in turn would transmit on X band all the way back to the Deep Space Network. But now they're not going to have that. That capability in the future, you're going to have three helicopters going where? They didn't say yet, you know, how are they going to transmit up to the orbiting satellites? And are they going to be working at the time? We keep losing, you know, a few of them at a time. You know, one time we had maybe four or five that we could use to communicate with, but you know, we're losing our some of the orbiting satellite capability. So that's going to be a problem. Now, because of that, they are trying to think ahead. They just gave Jeff Bezos an $800 million contract to send a orbiting communication satellite system into Mars orbit.